Hi, today is March 10th, 2024, Super Mario Day, start of daylight saving for some of you, not me. And I'm Taro Gasawar. This is Mobius Cop Podcast 501, if I could speak correctly. And of course, the good Dr. John Westfall is here with us as usual. And also our good friend Frank McPherson is back with us after a few weeks or months since we last spoke. And Don Sorcinelli. I'm going to go with American pronunciation. Any rate. So yes, today is March 10th. So it's, MAR10, which kind of looks like Mario. So Super Mario Day. I think Nintendo released some Switch stuff to observe today. I'm not as you guys know, I'm not a gamer at all of any kind. So, but I just haven't seen that in news. And also for you guys, daylight saving starts, right? So you guys all okay? You having any temporal fluctuations in your brain?
Well, the person that did it right was my wife. She spent a week in the Eastern time zone taking care of her mom after surgery, and then she drove back yesterday. So she got back into the Central time zone around 3 o'clock and then got to less than 12 hours later just go back to de facto the Eastern time zone. So that's the way you do it. You spend a week somewhere else and then come home real quick beforehand.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are movements, plural, afoot. One to make daylight saving permanent and one to make standard time permanent. So I don't know which way you guys fall on that philosophical issue.
I don't care who wins. I just want someone to win. I would like to get rid of time zones altogether. I would just like to have... I don't care what time it is that I have to get up and go to sleep, but doing time zone math has always been annoying to me. So I would prefer no time zones.
You know, China, which I think is geographically wider than the U.S. in terms of miles or kilometers, however you want, they're in one time zone. All of mainland China is one time zone, which I thought was insane. So I remember landing in Shanghai and it was like, you know, whatever time it was. And then we went inwards and it was like, it's like, wait a minute, I don't have to adjust my watch. This is back, you know, when we had non-smartwatches. And it was like, and then we moved back to the east coast of China and just like, wait, huh? Oh, no, there's no need for thunder. I can tell you from
okay
personal experience, you know, back in the 90s, I worked for a very large entity. By large, I mean, we had, I think, 180,000 employees at its peak. And we got bought by another large entity. And we were nationwide. Actually, we were worldwide. But, you know, but the entity that bought us, which is large, but was East Coast. They were only on the East Coast. And so our meetings would start at, like, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, Hawaii time. Because, hey, it's 8 a.m. here. We don't know what your problem is. Before I forget, I'm going to assume that nobody's digital doodads have any problems with daylight saving switches anymore. But I ran into a leap year problem or leap day problem last month. On February 29th, my security camera decided it was March 1st. And on March 2nd, it was March 2nd. And this continued on for a couple of days till it sort of said, hey, I didn't see a firmware upgrade, so I don't know what fixed it. Well, I sent a customer support email to the entity. Yeah, we'll just call it. It's Eufy, you know, the subsidiary of Anchor. And I got a bot response. It was totally nonsensical. I got a hallucination response, as the AI people would call it these days. I just call it wrong. And so I sent, so he says, do you want to escalate? I said, yeah. And they gave me some nonsensical answer to presumably a human or a smarter bot, but then it kind of righted itself. So that's good. Or, you know, the other thing you can do if you've got, like a roof, not too far, you know, a roof or something, a surface with sunlight coming into it somewhere, you can get a solar panel with outdoor USB-C cable. I've bought a couple of those. They were great. And you have a place that doesn't get sunlight, but you'd like to not have to recharge your camera. Plus, you're in a northern climate, so sometimes a year, not getting much sun anyway. Okay, well, Getting into it, since Frank is here, and we haven't seen or heard him in a couple of weeks or months. Frank, how the heck are you?
Can you hear me now?
Microsoft Teams.
Yeah, see, it's Microsoft Teams that was stealing my mic. I think. I wonder if I join it after, whether I'm going to join again and mute the mic from the start and see if that does.
Well, and one thing I've done is I always do Teams through the browser.
Yeah, I think Frank is back. Client.
Yeah, it's just the browser has the mic for both tabs.
Yep, so Teams is, so he has to drop Teams. Bad Teams. Bad. Yeah, I don't know what the problem is. Yeah, it's fine. It's okay, Frank. So anyway, how are you, man?
So much for the audio, the visual clue.
You were, I think,
I'm doing
on,
great. Thank you.
If I recall correctly, on Mobile's podcast. Well, I don't think we called it Mobile's back then. It was like Mobile Today. It was back when I was blogging. I think you were on podcast number 2. and I remember specifically asking you, well, aside from the fact you're a friend, is because you had just bought the brand new T-Mobile G1, the first Android phone available in the U.S., and my recollection is you've never strayed from Android after that. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. At least certainly for the phones. Yeah. I have only ever used an Android phone since then. And
oh, really?
Pretty much.
Well, that's right. Yeah, me too.
I believe.
I mean, not. I have an iPhone also, but.
Or a Pixel.
I've had a series of Nexus, and I currently have a Pixel 7a. Which is kind of sad because I just got it last year, like less than a year ago, and. Already, it doesn't support a lot of the stuff that Google is rolling out that only works on the 8, I think, or 8 Pro.
Well, they do the Pixel feature drops,
yeah.
And they tend to target the top-of-the-line phones first, and usually they trickle down. So the biggest of the most recent feature drops that people have heard is probably the circle, the search. It was originally from the Pixel 8. The most recent drop now made that available for the Pixel 7, but I don't think it's the 7a yet, but I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think I've gotten the update yet, so I could be wrong, but it'll probably come shortly. If it's for the 7, right, I think that still has the same version of the Tensor chip, which I got to think is what they've tied it to. So I'm looking forward to that.
So which Pixel are you on now, Frankie? Did you say you're on the 7? Same as me. Okay. All right. So we're both waiting for that. Well, you know, the search, 7A. The circle search is, it's interesting.
It's not something that I am going to be really upset if I never get it. Type of thing. Yeah. I don't know. It sounds like it's a slightly enhanced version of Google Lens, which I use occasionally. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just, when I do search, I just use
the
search bar and I either talk to
the voice
translation.
I'm disappointed
I'm
never
going to
get some of the Google camera features that are only, I think, in the 8 or 8 Pro.
I think the biggest thing with the latest Google change that's it's a little bit annoying is their release of Gemini. I originally, when they first announced Gemini availability for Android 14, I went out and tried it. And of course, it completely replaces Google Assistant. And I quickly found out one of the things it does not handle are Google Home routines, which I rely on quite often. And so I immediately uninstalled it so I could get that back. And then they did an update. Anyways, it had magically reappeared without me doing anything about it on another subsequent feature drop. And then I went and had to go and dig at this time because I did not get the app on my phone. It just now changed it to the default version of the, what did you want, either Gemini or the Assistant. So that was kind of annoying. I really don't think any hardware vendor, when they're doing something that's like release, should just not default to somebody, assuming somebody wants it. hopefully, I got to think they're headed towards replacing Assistant with Gemini, or just they're calling Gemini Assistant at some point in the future, and I would expect they're going to get the routines built in there. It's just a matter of time. But that's the I think the big upcoming thing will be that type of AI stuff and how much it really relies on the version of the tensor to see if you get all the features.
Well, that's the other thing, right? Gemini Nano or something with its online, I mean offline, which again is something you can't use on a 7A. So with a, what is it, 10 or 11 month old phone, I'm kind of like out in the dark. Yep.
Now try it via the web browser this time.
See, we can still hear you. Difference? Yay.
Yeah, can you hear
me? We should
me
make
still?
A note to Microsoft. Hey, Microsoft.
Yeah, so I'll just make a mental note of that to not use the app next time.
Yeah, which sounds like a Steely Dan song, but at any rate.
Mm-hmm. Or if the operating system was smart enough to give me a user easier control over where my mics are. So you could say that it's as much an Apple issue as a
speaking Microsoft of that, you know, we're gonna go a little I'm gonna go a little bit off the topic list in our show notes, but speaking of hardware issue that I'm not sure it's a hardware issue, but just something that surprised me. So I've used docks, you know, laptop, desktop docks for years and years and years and years. And so I didn't think I'd be surprised, but I got a really high-end dock for review the other day. And I plugged it in the other day. And by high-end, I mean it has 3 HDMI, 2 display ports, only 1 USB out, 1 USB PD, one USB-C, I should say. A whole bunch of 10 gigabit per second USB ports. But the couple of odd things about it is, one, it doesn't provide any power through the 10 gigabit per second USB-A ports. I mean, like none. And so it's data only, which I found interesting, as far as I can tell. And to use HDMI, period, you have to install a driver. It's a display link driver, you know, so it's, and yeah, and I get it, but I thought, oh, it just needs a driver if you're going to do something fancy, like drive 3 monitors at once or something.
So Todd, is it doing full 4K? Oh, because that's one of the things I ran into is some of the docks won't support a full 4K output. And then you may need a driver, or it's just not going to work. It particularly, I ran into it, with my MacBook Air, right, where you're trying to plug in with one cable, a USB-C cable. And in my recollection of some of the research, the capability of using that USB cable to do the higher resolution video is going to be dependent upon the compliance of the dock to the standards in its ability to support that display port standard. That's not
so
always
the fallout from it is
obvious which standard
the fallout
it's
is that
supporting.
It doesn't support Linux or iPadOS. And I use iPadOS with docks all the time, so that's kind of a bummer. But on the plus side, I found out that Chrome OS has Display Link driver built in. It's just integrated out of the box. So when I plugged the Chromebook in, you know, there's nothing to install. It just worked. Yeah, I have crummy monitors too, but yeah. I don't have any 4K monitors because, you know, I'm old and decrepit and I just don't feel like I need them or spend the money on that. But I did get this because I was just curious what a really nice dock looked like or worked compared to, you know, stuff. I had a big honking dock in my office when I was still working. It was terrible. It was so terrible. I bought in like a $40 USB-C dock and just replaced it completely. Yeah, I'm using a sub-$100, USB-C powered portable display too. I think it's 16 inches or something. Which used to be a full size monitor in our day, you know, Don. I'm gonna put a note to talk about the gadget prices that have dropped over the years because there's a bunch of them. But I'll put that in our show notes for discussion in a few minutes. But I did want to talk to you about some news. Oh well, one more question I had for all of you, and especially all of you, but I think John might have an interesting perspective in particular. A good friend of mine who has a son in high school that's interested in tech, and you know, maybe cybersecurity, but let's just say tech in general, was looking for things. And he is a great technologist himself, but he just was kind of soliciting other opinions on what to tell somebody that age these days, with all the changes that have been going on, which has affected a lot of us. What to tell him? What I told him, by the way, was whatever he does, whatever field he goes in, AI, just, you know, learn how to make prompts and what the tools are and how to use them. Don, go ahead.
Well, computer science is that my degree is in computer science, and true computer science is focused on algorithms, right? And so you're gonna pick a language to teach the algorithms, and you're not so much focused on technology. It's more about the broader problem solving skills and the theory that you're going to be able to apply that across the board. When I was in college and graduated in 1989 from an engineering school, there was literally just a bachelor's in computer science and a bachelor's in management information systems, or what would be known as traditional business IT. Ironically for me, after graduation, I for a period thought I was going to be a high school teacher because I had a secondary ed certification. And when I did not get a job in that area and I pursued a job so I could, you know, get employed, I ended up getting hired by Electronic Data Systems, which of course was an IT outsourcer, and had been in that ever since. So I, you know, basically did management information systems for my entire career, even though I had a traditional computer science degree. But my school now has bachelor's in network security, network engineering. They're much more specialized degree programs now, cybersecurity. My advice would be, and I had a friend whose daughter went into the same school we went in, the computer science. But, you know, my advice would be to not view yourself as having a future as a programmer. Any job that basically doesn't require interaction with human beings is probably, is going to be replaced now by either automation or somebody from a part of the globe where the labor cost is a lot lower than the United States. So you need the foundational types of elements that like a computer science degree would get. Yeah. But at the end of the day, something that's broader, an architecture type based thing, if you're going to stay in IT, or in a management path, that you got to deal with interacting with people, the skills to communicate, problem solve, and so forth. Are going to be what carries you forward. The classes I took for preparing me to be a teacher, ironically, are probably the things I used the most in my career from when I graduated.
You know, I always thought, I did not get a degree in computer science, but my first job was with a company called Computer Sciences Corp, oddly enough, or CSC. Which I think got absorbed by HP or somebody.
DXC Technology, that's my current employer. Yep. That's a merger between Computer Science Corporation and Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, Electronic Data Systems.
I always thought as a youngster, and you said by youngster, I mean I was in my 20s.
Now we're talking about
Thought I'd be a programmer my entire life, my entire career, I should say. And I didn't want to be a manager. I didn't want to, you know, do this, that, and everything. I just wanted to sit in front of a screen and build stuff. But over time, I don't know for everybody, but for me, it's like my interest shifted. It's like, yeah, this is fun, but I'd really like to build stuff I want to build rather than stuff people tell me to build. And that's where the shift happened. Other thing I think the shift in programming is physiological, not psychological, but physiological. As your eyes get worse and you get older, it gets harder to stare at a screen for long periods of time. I mean, it's just and I got glasses and stuff, but.
Well, the other, The other interesting thing, we've been talking a lot about college degrees, and the industry is taking another crack at a more certification approach. I think Google has been basically doing this, you know, so there's a become an emerging debate, and some of this may be along ideological lines of the value and obviously the cost of a college education. And are there lower cost alternatives like certification type programs, whether they're Google, Microsoft, or so forth? So I think that's an interesting development. I'm personally glad that I'm towards the end of my career. I'm approaching hopefully retirement soon. So all these changes, I'm happy that I don't have to kind of wade through these waters that have become nothing but more complicated over the last 30 years.
But before I retired, one of the things I did as being one of the IT guys in the state government is we had a meeting with some of the state senators, not the feds, but state senators who are interested in science, technology, and education. And they're proposing like high school academies focusing on specific technologies. You know, each academy would be focused on one thing, like, you know, Google Cloud or Amazon, you know, AWS or Cisco or network, you know, or something like that. And I said, you know, that's kind of the trade school idea is interesting, but, you know, I really hope you don't make people force them to think that's the best way, because there is something substantively different about getting a college education that is broader than a specific technical topic. So last and not least, so the good Dr. John Westfall, who's a psychology professor at a university. So you're not pumping out technologists in general, although I'm sure some of them will become technologists one way or another. But what do you tell your students in your specific discipline about technology these days? If anything.
So there are two things that have already kind of been alluded to. The first thing, when I teach senior seminar in psychology and I'm getting students to go out into the world, I spend a lot of time on general professional expectations of just, if you have a 4-year degree, this is what you're expected to know how to do. You're expected to know how to manage your time. You're expected to know how to manage your life. You're expected to be able to self-manage yourself, or else the micromanager will manage you. You should have all of those skills, because you don't, domain specific knowledge, especially I think today, is not as valuable as it ever would have been, because everything can be found on the internet in terms of the domain knowledge. It's just, do you have the skills to actually implement it in the workplace? And so, and with the mindset that most of my students are going to go to a variety of different places, I tell them, you've got to be prepared to pivot and be ready to pivot at pretty much any time. So even if you get an advanced degree, for my students that are going into counseling or they're going into research or something like that, I tell them, look, a 4-year degree is still going to open up a lot of doors, maybe not the doors you thought you were going to go through, but it's the professional skills that you'll then have in writing, presenting. You know, I tell them, you might not become a professor or a teacher, but you might end up in HR and have to run trainings, or you might end up somewhere else where you have to run presentations. That's your life, and you're the one that's supposed to be able to do it because you have a degree in psychology. You're supposed to be able to communicate with people. So you better be able to do that. And you might not ever teach anything about psychology. You'll just be the person that has to put together that new training, or the person that has to run the meeting for this, or coach people who are going to be interviewing job candidates or whatever it might be. Yeah, yeah, it really is that today. It's in fact, I just had a student last week who had said she couldn't quite understand why she had to take the capstone course, because it's, you know, are we just going to learn all the same stuff? No, this is when you actually have to be able to use it. And I need to be sure that you know how to use it before you go out in the world. You know, and this leads us to topics that you would not have seen in a psychology class 10 years ago. For example, in 2 weeks, I'm doing a whole day on money management for adults. What is an IRA? What is a 401k? What are, you know, why are credit cards useful and how do they get you in trouble? All this stuff, because my rationale is, you can't be a productive professional if all you're thinking about is, can I pay my bills? Do I have money? You're not going to be present with whatever job you have, because you're going to be continually distracted by other things. We do a day on work-life balance for the same reason.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, John, because life coaching by Dr.
I'm available for private coaching.
It's funny you say that because both my wife and daughter have an MBA, and neither of them had any personal finance course. I mean, that's not part of an MBA, but you would think, you know, I mean, they took accounting and stuff, but there's no like personal money management is part of the curriculum. And I wish it had spent at least a couple of weeks on that. Yeah, I don't think it's available anymore. And I'm older than all of you. But in my day, and I never took it, although I was kind of tempted, mostly because there were mostly girls in the class, was there's home economics. You know, my understanding is they taught personal finance and things like that in that class.
Home economics.
Well, and, you know, the interesting thing for me is we do teach personal finance in certain courses, but it's always, leaves you at, you know, get a check account, know how to balance your checkbook, savings accounts are a good thing. And then, you know, the student gets hired and the first thing is, do you want to sign up for the 401k? We offer 5% matching. They go, I have no idea what any of that means. Do I? I don't know if I do. What's this matching thing? What's this, you know? Yeah, that's stuff that they don't tell you in even personal finances because those curriculums really haven't been updated in 20 years, 30 years.
My friend, and hopefully you get something out of it. I really appreciate your thoughts on it. And just something I think of was because I said, you know, my daughter just finally finished her MBA. So, well, I shouldn't say finally. She did it on time, but. She took a break between her BA and MBA, and it took the pandemic to get her go back to school, which I kept pestering her about. But anyway, all right. Getting onto the news, and I think it should go fast. Apple announced stuff, but nothing I want to buy. They on some really nice Mac, you know, M3 MacBooks, but I'm really happy with. I'm using an Intel MacBook Pro right now from 2019, and I have a M1 MacBook Air from 2021, and they don't feel slow at all. I mean, do I need an M3? Do I want an M3? Yes. Do I need one? No. So, but no iPads. That's what I really want, regardless of whether I need it. I kind of want
That might be coming this week or next. Another memo from Apple.
Well, the way their stock has been kind of not tanking, but, you know, leveling downwards. They really might want to rethink this whole event thing. You know, that tends to pop stuff, you know, or, you know, say they're, you know, NVIDIA's buying them or something like that. I don't know. I think NVIDIA passed Apple the other day in market cap. But anyway, the other thing I wanted to note, and I wanted to ask you guys this because you've all known me a long time, especially Frank. You've known me since the 90s. So there are a bunch of transcription products out there, speech to text, including Adobe Podcast Studio, which we're using to transcribes our text. And recently, iOS 17.4 was released, I think last week, Monday. And it has now podcast transcriptions. So I looked at the MobileViews podcast to see how it transcribed, you know, us, and in particular me. Is my accent that heavy? My transcription was like, what?
Well, I got to imagine there's a dependency on the quality of the recording in the equipment being used to do the recording for audio to get good translation. I got to think that's a big part of the challenge. And then the processing needed to actually do that transcription is probably pretty significant to do it at a high rate. But I was just, you know, a comparable thing is handwriting. Translation, yes. Right? And mentioned last time I was on that I had recently bought the Books Note Air 3C. And so I do a fair amount of handwriting. And usually I'm just saving things in digital ink, but I occasionally am doing, you know, letting it do handwriting translation. And I continue to be surprised at how good the handwriting translation is now when I think back to my Newton message pad days. So some of the newer technology and processing capabilities with just the improvements over the computational programming side of things to do the translation have come in such a long way. It's kind of amazing. I got to imagine the voice, the audio translation, the text is in a comparable Genesis.
Again, you know,
one early beginnings right
Adobe's
now, and it's just only going to get better over
Studio
time.
Studio Beta, even though it does have some challenges for people to join in and so forth, is because it does such a good job. It's, you know, a legit AI. And I say alleged because, you know, it's really just smart sound manipulation, but it's AI filtering of us or modification. It does a really good job. So for example, you know, our volume levels are all different because, you know, we get different mics, we're different distances from the mic, blah, blah, blah. I'm getting a little bit of popping from Frank and a little bit of static from John, presumably because of network problems and so forth. But Adobe Podcast is going to clean up like 90% of that. So it does a really good job of making us sound like we are maybe not in the same room, but, you know, in very similar kinds of audio environments. It's really shockingly good. You know, like I said, a couple of podcasts ago, when I was recording with Ed Margolis from Nextiva, we had a little issue because he had enterprise teams and I have personal teams, and I didn't want to make him fuss to try to, you know, create a new account just for the podcast. So I just said, hey, just give me a call on the phone. And I recorded him on the iPad Mini 6, you know, just from a microphone. And he was on the speakerphone of my iPhone. And then I put it through Adobe Podcast Enhance, which is just the AI filter alone. And it did a remarkably good job of cleaning up our audio, despite the fact that he was on a speakerphone and I was live in front of the microphone. We sounded pretty close together in terms of audio quality. So, yeah. Anywho, speaking of that, I'm looking at our audio quality. I think I'm too far from the mic, but that's okay. It should fix a lot of that too. Okay, so apparently I talk funny. Sorry about that, gang. I think Don put in something about, oh yeah, Android subsystem. Yeah, a similar situation is in the Apple world too. So if you have an M-powered, you know, Apple Silicon Mac, you can run some but not all iOS, iPadOS apps on your that's because I think some developers block it from using it on a Mac for various and sundry reasons, like you don't have a pen, you really need a pen for my app, that kind of thing. But I hardly ever use any iOS apps on my Mac, my M1 Mac. You know, I never really looked, I looked at it briefly, but it's the Linux subsystem for Windows, which has been around for a long time now, and I used it briefly years ago. Is that a true VM or is that a container? Going back to Android, I didn't understand the last one, I think you put in, Don, that the latest, which beta is this? Because I'm running 14 now. I gotta say, as much of fun we poke at Microsoft, when we're Windows Mobile MVPs, I don't remember an update bricking any of my phones, and I had a lot of phones. Right. No, but I mean, when we were getting betas directly from Microsoft, except for the one time when they had to like desolder something on my phone, I had to send my phone in. You guys probably remember that.
Yeah, and we are talking about a beta piece of software, right? So, I mean, in general, if you don't want to take the chance, you don't have to. You just stay with the stable release version of Android and be done with it.
Moving on to gadgets, I've been reviewing a bunch of stuff over the last half a year or so, and I'm old school. I used to pump my car tires up when they're a little low, not flat, but just, you know, a couple of pounds, with a bicycle pump. And that's worked fine, except I'm getting older and I can't find my bicycle pump now. But I think the last one may have broken, you know, the valve may have popped off the tube. But I recently got a USB-C rechargeable air compressor. And it's not that expensive. A compressor tire inflator. And it comes with a bunch of valves, you know, to use with a bicycle. Well, bicycle and air and car tires are the same, but, you know, like a inflate a ball or whatever. So it comes with a bunch of valves. The thing was, again, remember, I've been using mostly a bicycle pump for decades now. I did get one for my daughter that plugs into what used to be called a cigarette lighter, now called a power adapter. And so you got to run a long cable, and it works great. But, you know, you got to keep an eye on the analog gauge, to make sure you don't overinflate and all of that. And it's fine. But at any rate, I got this thing. It is tiny. It looks like an oversized iPod. Literally, it has a circular iPod wheel control on it. It's also a 7,500 milliamp recharger, which is kind of neat if your phone's also a little low. But the thing that I found interesting was, so you put the valve on the Schrader valve on your tire, and you have a digital readout, and you say how many PSI your tire should be, minus 32 cold. And you turn it on, and you see the air pressure increasing in PSI. I think you can also do it in millibars if you so choose. You see the PSI rising, and when it hit 32, it just stops. It's like, I'm done. And for someone who's not seen compressor technology apparently in a long time, that was like magic. It's like, oh my goodness. you can actually turn away, if you're doing it on the side of the road and look if somebody's trying to kill you. So that's my thing. To, if you have not looked at air compressor technology for your car in a long time, go look for this stuff. It's pretty amazing. USB-C rechargeable, doubles as a, it's only 10 watts out, so it won't do an iPad, but we'll do your phone, which is probably what's most important. I'll charge your phone at digital controls. It's really tiny. I mean, really tiny.
I've got one of those compressors that plugs into the power adapter. It's one of the best Christmas gifts I ever got. And I think, if you ever gone out and looked for a air pump at a gas station anymore, if you can find one, you are actually paying money to actually put air in your tires. So I think buying one of those type of compressors like that, Christmas presents, stocking stuffers, it's one of the more useful things to get, throw in the car and keep in the garage.
It's actually kind of fun.
It certainly made my life a whole heck of a lot better.
If you have a good compressor.
Since I've gotten mine.
Versus like, ugh. and that last two things, last gadget thing before I get this with some of the John's illustration attempts, which I assume are AR-based, is what we're alluding to earlier. The gadget prices have been dropping dramatically, not for everything, but certainly PCs under $200, desktop PCs, are remarkable. Really, unless you're a power user, you're trying to do a AI on your desk all by yourself. If you're on the mainland, I can't get any of those shipped to me, by the way. By the way, that's why I keep mentioning multifunction doodads, gadgets, that also serve as battery chargers, because I cannot order a standalone battery charger and have it shipped to Hawaii. Well, you are not wrong, Don. We've had, I think we've been okay lately. By lately, I mean the last 30 days. But we had a run of 5 or 6 multi-hour outages, including one that was 10 hours. I got to throw away the food kind of outage from your fridge. And, I don't have a solution for my fridge yet. I don't have like a Tesla battery wall or anything. Say what you want about the U.S. Army, but we never had a power outage in Alaska. Not once in the 2.5 years I was there, including 3 winters. It was pretty darn remarkable. I don't know who provided the power to the base, but they did a standout job. Well, there is, by the way, for those who have, power issues where they live like I do. I know not everybody has faith in the government, but there is a foodsafety.gov website that gives you a lot of good information about, food storage and how long things can last in a fridge, how long things can last in a freezer by category and all of that. So, go read up on that before your next power outage or immediately after one, after hopefully your power and your internet is stored. All right. So gadget prices have really, dock prices have dropped. You can break docks are under $30 now. Just amazing to me. And I'm really happy, especially now that I'm retired, that the prices have dropped commensurate with my income. So the last thing I wanted to note is John has had, John, how long have you been doing Bad Joke Saturdays? It's been a while.
But now you're adding a new wrinkle to your 2013 was the first Bad Joke Saturday. Yeah, I've started realizing that AI can help me illustrate some of these things to the degree that I had never been able to before. So in line with trying to build up some social media presence, I've put together some illustrations of the old ones. So if you vaguely remember 10 year ago Bad Joke Saturdays and wondering why they never repeat, well, now you'll have visual forms if you go look for these things.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think Google's Gemini image thing still isn't back up fully. I haven't checked it, but Microsoft Designer does a credible job. It uses, whatever OpenAI's tool is. I forget what it is, their tool. So I'm looking at John's. I'm wondering where they're getting these illustrations from, because they look pretty familiar, some of them. Especially the first one you have, which I don't understand that Bad Joke Saturday.
Addicted to Brake Fluid.
Yeah, I don't get it.
You can stop whenever you want.
Well, I know what Brake Fluid is, but I don't get it. But anyhow, okay.
Yeah, I should put one of these up. I know that in terms of social media, a couple of them haven't come out yet, but the last one was the one that got the most response. I think people enjoy that one. Yeah, well, it is an interesting turn of phrase to say the last thing I'd ever want to do is hurt you. Well, why is it even on the list? I mean, that
sounds like
kind of confusing.
Liam Neeson kind of, last thing I want to do is to hurt you. But if the day should come, I have a very special set of skills.
That's just GAG 101, isn't it?
We are coming to, we've passed the top of our literal hour. We're at a little over an hour on this recording. So I just want to thank Don Sorcinelli again, using your Americanization version of your name. And Frank McPherson, and I'm sure I'm Americanized his last name too. but that's fine. I Americanized my name too. And of course, the good Dr. John Westfall is ours. Thanks for joining the podcast, gang. It's always great to have you guys. We'll talk to you soon.